America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Welcome back, everybody. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, the champ, Chris Algieri. We're both rocking our Yankee hats for those that are listening, because as we record this, it is opening day. Yankees over Dodgers, World Series, 7 games is my prediction. How are you, Chris? It is another day. It is another dollar. I don't know why I said that. That's douchey.
That is so douchey. That's so douchey.
Let's get this bread.
That's so Long Island of you, bro. But it's good, man. It's opening day. Weather's nice. I mean, weather's always nice down here. My AC's out, so I'm in a tank top because I'm sweating in my own house. But otherwise, things are good.
We have not spoken since you were inducted into the Ring 8 New York State Boxing Hall of Fame. I did put it on Twitter, and it got a nice reaction from our faithful listeners and our colleagues in the industry. Great speech. By the way, Chris gave a great speech. I'm not saying this because you're my friend and podcast partner. Best speech of the whole afternoon. How do you feel to be a Hall of Famer?
It feels cool. Feels pretty good. I didn't know how excited I was about that until actually the day of. Like, my family was like super excited. They're like, "Oh, this is such a big deal. We all got to go." And I was like, "Nah, it's just not a big deal." And then I took a plane, a train, an automobile to get there, like overnight from California.
This guy showed up late to his own Hall of Fame induction. I got there at 12 when it started. There's not that many tables at this place. Russo's on the Bay is awesome, and the Ring 8 phenomenal job. That was my first time ever attending one of these. Phenomenal. 600 people there. But I got there, and I was early, and I could see all the tables, and I saw where your table was and the Algieri table. And I'm looking for it. I don't see any of your. I don't see your brother. I don't see your nephews. I don't see your dad. I don't see your. I don't see any Algieri. 12 o'clock turns into 1 p.m. 1:15. They start the ceremony. They don't even intro you. I'm like, did I dream this? Is he really in the Hall of Fame?
Maybe he's not in the Hall of Fame. Maybe he lied.
I knew that you were coming from California, and then I started to get like worried. I was like, yo, did something happen? Like, this is horrible. Am I gonna have to give the speech? This is great. Then I go.
I get to finally the belt in his honor. Oh, this is awesome.
I finally see your dad and brothers come up, and I'm sitting with them. And I didn't know that you were flying and landing at JFK and then running over like a lunatic.
Yeah, I was talking to the president, Ron. I was like, hey, listen, you know, I'm taking basically a red eye flight from California the night before. I'm working the night before. I'm going to land at like 1:30, which is, you know, almost 2 hours late. So by the time I get there, it's going to be 2. But yeah, I flew early that morning. I changed in JFK, put on my suit, and got over there as quick as I could. Got there about 2, and I'm walking in. Everybody's like, "You got to speak, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, like you write a speech." I'm like, "Nope, I'm just going to wing it."
And your brother said you're the king of winging it.
I'm the king of winging speeches. That's for sure. I think about it a little bit, and then I just let my emotions take over.
But no, it was really nice. It was a good speech. Yeah, it was a really fun afternoon. And you are a Hall of Famer, bro. And I was thinking about it. It makes, like, you're a real New Yorker. Like, yeah. Humble beginnings, grassroots, Huntington, to the big stages in New York, Barclays, MSG, you know, kickboxing on the New York scene, becoming a world champion. Like, you're a New York State Hall of Famer, true and true. So, congrats,
buddy. Yeah, I went to college in New York, both undergrad and graduate, high school, all New York. Second Long Island world champion ever. Behind Buddy McGirt is number one. So, yeah, man, I'm a New Yorker through and through. Thus.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to see, and it was nice to see some of our boxing brethren. So some of our friends over there. So Mitch Blood Green. So Michael Spinks.
We saw Junior Jones, Poison.
Always see him at events.
Yep. Sonia Lomanakis, who's doing a great job. Both Serrano sisters, Cindy and Amanda, were both there.
It was really cool to see Cindy get her just due, because she was the first fighting Serrano, and she was
good, man.
Yeah,
she was really good. You know, she fought everybody. She fought the toughest girls around. It was nice. I actually was sitting up next to her at the dais. We got to speak a little bit. She's super sweet. Amanda is too, of course. But Sonia Lomanakis, who's doing a great job with USA Boxing and the amateur program up in New York. Who else did we see?
Yeah, it was good to see. Lou DiBella was there. There were some characters. It was just a lot of characters. It was very loud in there. Like, no one was listening to the speeches, but everyone did listen to your speech, Chris.
Yeah, I think I was the only quiet speech all night, all afternoon.
I would hate to give a speech to no one listening. It was just a bunch of old-time boxing characters, and they all want to be seen and heard.
They're trying to relive the glory days, man. I get it. I'm going to be doing the same thing in 25 years.
Everyone's showing up.
I'm
going to
show up
in
this thing and, yeah, looking good.
Everyone, you remember when I fought fucking Belamonte in the Golden Gloves in 68? And then meanwhile, this guy is up on the stage, like, pouring his heart and soul out on one of his speeches, and no one's listening.
Crying from a piece of loose leaf that he wrote up all afternoon.
Unbelievable afternoon. It was peak people watching and just awesome afternoon.
Food was good there, too, though. Food was fantastic.
Food was phenomenal. Yeah. I was expecting bad food.
Yeah, no, Roosters in the Bay is no joke. I mean, it's a wedding hall. They do it right.
Yeah. It was good. It was an awesome Sunday, and that was really nice. In less than stellar news, we lost George Foreman in the boxing world. That sucked. That was like a knock over the head on last Friday. And thank you to everyone that left some really nice messages on our previous episode with Jim Lampley, which was awesome to hear Jim's stories. And more of a personal note that episode, because obviously we know all the accolades from George. We know all of his achievements inside of the ring, but I wanted everyone at home to understand the type of person he was, and I think Jim was able to tell those stories. I was able to tell a few stories with George growing up as part of the HBO boxing family, as very small stories as a kid. You have any memories of George? Because we didn't get to hear from you.
No, I think that George is one of those, I mean, we mentioned characters earlier, he's one of those characters in the sport that was just able to transcend being an athlete. And George is kind of the kind of guy, he just felt, he was Big George, you know, like that second coming of Big George, which is what we grew up with. We grew up the older George. We don't know the first George, the mean gangster guy who was, you know, scary, Sonny Liston, Mike Tyson type guy. We don't know that guy. You know, we know like the jovial former preacher, you know, who's coming to make a comeback and it's kind of laughable, but then he actually does it. And then we know the George Foreman grills, which I think for our age group, that's probably what most people our age would think of him if they weren't hardcore boxing fans. My point is that he was a character that was able to transcend the sport and become like a household guy, household name. He was like having like Big Uncle George, you know. I was like, that's kind of what he had. But he became for a lot of people. Made a ton of money. Was a two-time world heavyweight champion. Something special, man. Something that I don't think we're ever going to get someone like Big George again.
Two-time world champ, 1975, 1995.
20-year gap.
What? What is that?
Dude, having one career where you become world champion is incredibly hard. This guy did it twice.
He had two boxing careers. He had two, like, personas. Mean man. Just really mean. And then maybe the most lovable guy. You just wanted to give him a big hug.
I forgot who else. I think on one of the Pro Box shows, I said, you know, he basically lived four lives. You know, he was that first run as the mean heavyweight. Then he was a preacher and a man of God and a family man and you know, had a family and had like a million Georges, you know, all his kids.
All the Georges. Then, George number three. I know him.
yeah, me too. And then he comes back in that second run as, you know, as becoming heavyweight champion, where he's Big Jovial George. And then lastly, like, he's a commentator and brand ambassador for this multi, probably, maybe, I mean, George Foreman grills probably made $1 billion.
200, 300. Yeah, he made a lot of money with that.
He made a lot of money. I mean, the company itself probably made over $1 billion. So you've got those four lives. You know, you got two fight careers, you got a preacher and a family man, and then you got like a brand ambassador and a excellent commentator. Dude, he was awesome on HBO. I know a lot of people joke about some of the things he would say. I thought he was phenomenal. As a fighter, when I was growing up, I'm like, he's saying things that like only fighters know about. So I tip my hat to George in every way possible.
Yeah, he was great. What a life. And that's going to reverberate for a long time, and his legacy will live on. Perfect segue. I want to talk about heavyweight division on this episode to start off talking heavyweights, because we haven't talked about them in a while. There hasn't been a lot of chatter. I feel like the Usyk-Fury fight happened, and then we just were like, all right, we got undisputed, so what's going to happen next? But there are some dominoes starting to fall. There are some pieces starting to move around. Obviously, Daniel Dubois pulls out of the Joseph Parker fight. He has one piece of the heavyweight championship. The other three belong to Alexander Usyk. Will we see Dubois versus Usyk 2 at Wembley? That's a fight that's being rumored about. Daniel Dubois says, not so fast. I could fight Derek Chisora, who is the IBF mandatory, if Usyk Parker gets made, because Joseph Parker knocked out Bacoli, and Parker was supposed to get his shot at Dubois, and now Parker is the interim champion for one of the belts. I don't know which one. I don't know. But Parker is up in that discussion as well. So there's this log jam at the top, which usually happens after someone becomes undisputed. These are all fun names. I will give it that. In the years past, we would have these mandatories that you've never heard of. We would have these heavyweight, you know, Trevor Bryan, Emmanuel Char, those types hanging around trying to get into her. Who's the big tall guy that kissed the woman on the lips? Pulev. Pulev will be lurking around. But at least these are fun names, Chris. How do you think this will all shake out?
You know, it's hard to say because meritocracy, especially in the heavyweight division, is rarely what occurs. I think Joseph Parker deserves the fight. I think that for the Usyk fight. And then if that's the case, then this apparently this Dubois and Chisora fight happened. I don't know how Chisora keeps getting these shots.
Dude, he's the IBF mandatory.
And this is what I mean with the IBF. The IBF is so hit or miss. They are either they're fighting the good fight or they're doing stupid stuff like this. It doesn't really make sense to me. But I think Parker deserves the Usyk fight. He's a former world champion. He hasn't gotten a shot in a long time. He's been on a great run. His last three fights were great wins over, obviously, the Bacoli fight, which is a last-minute replacement. But he knocks him out cold in a second round. That's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Didn't expect him to do that. Hasn't scored a world-class knockout in a long time. He beat Zhang, got off the canvas twice to do that, really had to dig deep, showed his real mettle in that fight. Beats Wilder, which he was a big underdog in that fight. So, that kind of run, come on, man. For a former champion, how do you not get a title fight next? Not to mention, him and Dubois were supposed to fight, and this should have been decided who was going to fight Usyk. Dubois is the guy who pulled out. So from what I understand, you shouldn't get the fight. Dude, you pulled out. I know you're sick. I know whatever. Things happen. Guess what? Parker showed up and won. So there's no way he shouldn't get that fight. He deserves it. But what's probably going to happen is probably going to be Dubois. All that said and done, it's probably going to be Dubois.
Dubois Usyk too.
Yep. And then poor Parker is going to be left out once again. Oh, there's a great narrative for that fight.
He's not poor, Chris.
Well, no, he deserves all the money that he's been making because this guy's been grinding for a very long time. And he's also just a good dude, man.
Did you see his video that he put out?
Which one? I mean, he puts out so many.
His latest one was a Shania Twain cover, "You're Still the One," about Usyk.
This guy's something else, man.
He's walking on the beach. He's singing. He's "You're Still the One," Shania Twain. Great song. So Parker wants Usyk.
Of course he does. He wants to shine the undisputed, and that's the biggest payday possible for him.
So I'm not upset at any of these options. I am upset over Dubois Chisora. Don't have no interest in seeing that. I respect Chisora. He just won his retirement fight, which wasn't a retirement fight. I mean, talk about just inaccurate marketing and just leading people astray. That was supposed to be his retirement fight. Then they have this whole presentation in the ring with like cue cards, and it was pre-planned on who we wanted to fight next. So it wasn't his last fight, clearly.
Talk about characters in the sport.
Yeah,
Chisora is a character, and he does a good job at kind of marketing. You know, that whole debacle with him and David Haye before they fought, Dude. Basically set up each other to, you know, and he got punched with a bottle, like ridiculous stuff to sell fights.
He's a legend. He is a legend over there. He is like the god.
Deservedly so.
Listen, he fought
his heart out forever.
Not going to knock the guy. Do I want to see him in title fights? No. Do I want to see him? I don't want to see him anymore, to be honest, because I think he's taking a beating, and I'm worried about how he's going to age. But that's a whole discussion for another day. But yeah, I would love Usyk Dubois 2 would excite me because of the backstory. Because I just think it's next up. Dubois, I favored him to beat Parker in their fight, but I wish it would have happened. If you tell me Parker's getting the shot at Usyk, I love that too. These are all fine heavyweight fights. Let's just get it going. That's the thing. Like, the heavyweight division has been moving in the last couple of years because of Turkey, because of Saudi. We're getting some talks now. I think the next big one is going to be in the summer. So I think that Dubois, Usyk, or Dubois Parker is going to happen in the summer. And they're talking about Wembley, no matter what, which I love. Get him out of Saudi, put him in Wembley. So yeah, that's the latest at the top of the heap of the heavyweight division. I don't know if you saw this. Anthony Joshua being called out by Jake Paul.
I did see that. I was thinking, and you know what I thought about, Dan? It's just a funny little idea. I'm like, this guy needs to be careful who he's calling out, because at some point, one of these guys is going to be like, okay. Like Anthony Joshua, if he just goes, you know what? Okay.
And bro, he answered the call.
And ices him in 30 seconds, like he 100% would. Like, and he might get really hurt. Listen, Jake's a big dude, but Anthony Joshua's a different thing. I think Anthony Joshua's still one of the best punchers in the world today. I mean, when he iced Ngannou, that was ridiculous. So you got to be careful calling out everybody, because if someone says okay, and then you go, oh, okay, I'm going to get this money, and they get your head knocked off, that's one thing. Two, you the guy says yes, and then you go, oh, no, I was just kidding. You look like a complete fool. So either way, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You start calling out everybody, and someone actually finally goes, okay, let's go.
Well, Joshua did FaceTime him immediately after the call out. Eddie Hearn is just giddy at the idea of making this fight. Jake Paul says 2026 is when it could possibly go down. He says Joshua is tall, he's stiff, he has no chin, he has no technique. You know, I tend to disagree there. First of all, Joshua
I love he calls people out and then says how bad they are. It's like, okay, so you only want to fight people who can't fight? Okay, got it. You only want to fight guys who are shot? Okay.
Joshua's 6'6", and he's 260 on a light day. He could be 270, 270. Yeah, with abs and just looks like he's chiseled. Like that just kind of shows you where Jake Paul's mind is at. He loses out on the Canelo fight. He loses out on the Joanna Davis fight. And now he goes to another ticket seller. He goes to another big name in Anthony Joshua. But you're right, Chris. I think that it's coming down to the point where – you know, he is calling out these guys, and they are going to take him up on it because they know that they're going to make top dollar. And Usyk even called out Jake Paul, you know, flip-flopped it. Usyk said, I would fight Jake in an octagon, which is just like, what? Like, come on. What are we doing here?
I feel like that's Usyk just being like a gamesman. But I'm gonna go completely off the ball. What about like Alex Pereira, that from the UFC?
Well, Jake called him out after a fight.
Yeah, go fight it. Pereira 100% would fight him. He'd fight him in an octagon. He'd fight him in a ring. He'd fight him in the street corner. That guy is a problem. That's a fight I would actually want to see, because I don't want to see Jake with like a real – like I don't want to see him with Anthony Joshua. Like but Alex Pereira, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, he did call him out after the Perry win, and Pereira just lost in the UFC. He's kind of getting up there in age, and I don't know what his deal is with the UFC. But Tyson Fury remains retired. Bob Arum comes out and says, I hope he stays retired.
Whoa.
I think Turkey, like, you know, not in a bad way. I think Arum was just like, I hope he, you know, if he's going to retire and say he has nothing left to prove, and I hope if he says he wants to retire, I hope he doesn't come out of retirement for the wrong reasons. Pretty much that's what Arum was saying.
Fair. But it's true. He does not have anything left to prove, but there's still a lot of money out there, dude. There's still a lot of money out there. And the Joshua fight still makes sense.
Yeah, I've heard that Netflix wants Fury Joshua.
Oh, then it's going to happen.
They have a lot of money.
You're going to keep Fury away? No way.
That's the last, only fight we have to see left. Then you retire. Like, I don't necessarily have to see Joshua Fury, but I do think it would be a great exclamation point on the heavyweight era.
I would still like to see Anthony Joshua and Wilder. Even as faded as Wilder is, I still would want to see that fight.
Well, Wilder was supposed to fight on BLK Prime in April, and that obviously fell through. I don't know what Wilder wants to do. I think Wilder would love to do that. Joshua's in a weird spot because he kind of just like fizzled out of like this discussion that we just talked about, this three-headed monster or four-headed monster with now.
He's not in the top of the division anymore. I don't think.
But he is in terms of like name and like recognition.
100%. But do you want to see him? Nobody wants to see him in the rematch with Dubois. Nobody wants to see him fight Usyk again. Does anyone really care for a Parker rematch? You know,
bring on Jake Paul.
I think there's Tyson and there's Wilder, which now
Wilder Fury got, Paul.
Wilder Fury Paul. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right. And every fight is big.
Every fight's big. And every fight, well, not every fight. The first two fights are tough. And I'm not sure he wins both of those fights. I think he beats Wilder. I think Tyson's a really tough fight. But yeah, that's a good little run.
Some of the other heavyweight fights, but Coley is getting his fight with Ajagba. That's going down on the Canelo card. So Bacoli flies in, does a job for Turkey, gets plastered, gets his reputation sullied. Let's see how he comes back.
His shin is. I mean, he got checked, and Ajagba can punch. So I thought Bacoli was going to steamroll Ajagba, but now. Coming off of getting knocked out a couple months ago, that changes the face of this fight.
Well, just 3 months ago, Bacoli was the second coming of George Foreman.
Right. And then
now he's washed, fat guy.
Yeah, he's washed, fat guy. You know, Parker, who can't really punch, knocked him dead with one shot. So
that's not right. Come on, the guy gave us some excitement, Bacoli.
It's boxing, dude. It's boxing.
But Coley was like, all right, I'll step in. I'll give you guys some excitement. You want your UFC moment where these UFC, they make these last-minute fights and everyone's excited, and sometimes they're more exciting than the original fight. And he flies across the world, and he gets in that ring. He does get plastered, and then everyone is just like,
Boxing, nobody cares about the moral victory. There are no moral victories in boxing.
Brutal. That, like,
it's brutal. It's a totally, totally brutal business.
Brutal. What else? Oh, Guido Villanelli. Villanello? Villanelli. Villanello. Guido Villanelli.
Villanello.
Guido Villanello is fighting Richard Torres April 5th. Sneaky, awesome
sneaky good fight.
Fight.
Yeah, I love this fight. I think timing-wise, it's really interesting because I don't know if Torres is at his best yet, if he's reached his potential. And Guido's been on a great streak lately. Great momentum. Mm-hmm. Interesting timing for that fight.
We're going to find out what Richard Torres is made of, because Guido Villanelli is a heavyweight that has fought not the top talent, but he's formidable. He's a lot better than anyone Richard Torres has fought.
Yeah, I mean, for Richard Torres, this is like you said, this is the best opposition he's ever fought. But like, this looks to me like Top Rank being like, all right, it's time to shit or get off the pot, because mm-hmm. you got to fight somebody for real. We've been feeding you a steady supply of porridge, of warm porridge. Now you got to fight somebody for real, and Guido's for real. So very interesting matchup for the timing.
Another guy that's kind of out of the loop, even though he shouldn't be, is Ajit Caballero, ranked 5th on ESPN's top 5 heavyweight ranking, has some unbelievable wins. Burst onto the scene. Many think he could upset anyone in this division. I don't know who he fights, where he fits in.
I think he still has a lot more work to do. That's just me. I know he's got some good wins, but you know, there's a little asterisk on some of them. Zhang is 42. You know, Frank Sanchez, I believe he had a knee injury. Arslan Makhmudov, we found out, can't fight. You know, like, yeah, okay, he beat him. He was the first guy to beat him, but then we've seen him since, and the guy can't fight at all. So
no.
he needs more world-class performances, like the way he has. If he stays the way he's been going, absolutely. But I don't think he can walk him right into top 5 fights just yet.
And there's one more. Hrgović is stepping in.
He's getting coming back.
He's stepping in to fight Joe Joyce, which is like last man standing. I think that Hrgović has a lot more left than Joyce. That's like kind of a sneaky slugfest. Winner stays in the picture. If Joyce loses, he's officially done. Hrgović can't afford to lose again either. So that's like a decent fight at heavyweight.
I think it makes sense too, because you know Zhang destroyed Joyce twice. Hrgović beat Zhang in a super, super close fight, and they're going back and forth. So they're kind of looking at that like Hrgović's like, well, you know, I beat Zhang and Zhang blew him out. So maybe I can blow him out. But Joe Joyce, you know what you're getting with him. He's going to throw a lot of punches and he's going to hit a lot. So it'll be fun. You know, we got to see what kind of power Ergovic really has. Is his power world class? Is he world class? If he is, he should beat Joyce. And if he stops him, I think that's a major statement. But you know, the juggernaut is the juggernaut. I know his chin hasn't been great lately, but I don't know. That's I think the potential for Ergovic especially is big in that one.
And Moses Atuma, who I believe and everyone believes will be a future heavyweight champion, expected to fight on the Josh Taylor undercard in May. That is according to Frank Warren. Don't be shocked if Atuma has a serious rise this year, or they get him in there with you know, a name like a Joyce or a Hergovic or someone like that, where he can get a scalp and say, you know what, I'm here.
He's a stud, but so young, man. I don't know.
So hard to tell.
It's so hard to tell. It's heavyweights too, man. Like there's a lot of ways that a heavyweight career can go, especially, you know, this early on. But I mean, he still strikes me as being like a young guy though. Like when Mike was world champion, like, yeah, he was 20, but like, he didn't look 20. He didn't act 20. He didn't seem 20. Yeah, Moses does to me strike me as being, you know, that young.
So you're saying Moses Atuma wasn't incarcerated 15 times before he was 12?
Not that I know of. It doesn't seem like it.
I'll tell you what, Atuma has the hype train behind him. Every UK talking head is on script saying that he's a surefire next, you know, take the torch from these older heavyweights. It's like him and Dubois, the big showdown.
Pump the brakes, UK media. I know you're all getting the same script. It's like the politicians over here. It's the CNN and the Fox News. They get the same go around. They all got to say the same narrative. We'll see. Pump the brakes. It's all up.
They're in a lather,
young man.
They're in a lather over there. Yeah. So that's the heavyweight division right now. Exciting. Let's get some more movement. There's been a little bit of a stoppage since December, right? Fury Usyk 2 was December, right? Late December. So it's been, we haven't had a big heavyweight fight.
Well, January was crazy. Like a dead month across the sport, heavyweight and under. Everything was dead in January. And we started to pick up in good in February. We had the Davis fight. We had that big, a huge card over there, yep. Then the Davis fight. So yeah, you're right. Heavyweights have been kind of quiet this year.
I guess the big one next is not big, but it's big in terms of eyeballs, will be May 2nd at that whole weekend. May 2nd weekend between the Times Square card, Canelo on the 3rd, and then Inoue on the 4th. But what next up over the weekend, we saw Sebastian Fundor completely wipe out Chordell Booker. Did it in 4 rounds, looked really good. Fundor, it was his first fight in a year since upsetting Zhu, or I don't know if that was somewhat of an upset. Yeah, it was an upset. Beating Zhu. I thought he looked really good, and I thought he looked dominant, but not much to talk about in the fight. But what we can talk about is this log jam at 154, especially now with Crawford telling the WBO that I will not be fighting at 154 for the remainder of my career. Not a shocker there. So he gives up his belt, and now Xander Zayas becomes the WBO mandatory at 154. Him and Fundora seems to be the next fight for Fundora, but I'm not so sure of that. You got Bakram, IBF champ. You got Zayas as the WBO mandatory, and you got Fundora with two of the belts. Those are the champions. Virgil Ortiz looming. Jermell Charlo put out a video that I'm back and I'm coming with the 154. Thurman, 154. A lot of names swirling around 154 right now.
Yes, and I don't even know where to start with all that. That was a lot, Dan. But the Xander Zayas one is getting some traction. I don't know how realistic that is because of, you know, sides of the street and whatnot. But I know from talking to Top Rank that Xander's been. He wants everybody. He wants the top right now. Doesn't want to develop anymore. He thinks he's ready for the top guys. And Fundora, in the last fighter meeting that I had with Xander, he's like, Fundora's the guy. He's like, I know I can beat him. I see the holes.
Everyone says that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, he, dude, Fundora is, as much as he's an issue, The guy's got two belts, and we've seen him iced by Brian Mendoza. Like
he's an anomaly.
So he presents this massive problem because he's super tall and he's awkward and he can punch and he's a good puncher and he likes to fight on the inside. He's super tough. He'll get off the canvas and fight, but he's been solved before. That riddle has been solved, and people have seen that. So people are looking at that like, all right, I'm a fast track to being a unified champion if I get that fight. So everybody wants him, obviously. Nobody wants Murtaza Liev. He is super dangerous. No. Nobody wants that guy. He is going
Poor
to be
guy.
Left. He's going to be left in the cold. Thank God he has a title to hold on to, because that's going to force people to actually have to fight him for, if they really want to be undisputed and to unify.
He doesn't have a, no offense to Main Events. They do. I mean, they're phenomenal at what they do of you know, just sticking around for so long. But he doesn't have a huge, big promoter either.
He doesn't have and he has zero profile. Zero profile. If he wasn't champion, we would literally never hear about this guy. So, right. And he's a bad mother sucker. I think he's one of the guys in the weight class that really is that no one's going to want to fight. He's a dark horse. Virgil and Bohochuk are also lying in the winds. Bohochuk is a dangerous guy as well. Really tough, deep weight class. And it's funny. I don't even know if I have Fundora in the top five. In terms of who I think we should.
That's so crazy.
Isn't that crazy? Like he's
no, it's not crazy.
Champ.
Right. It's not crazy for you to say that, because I kind of understand the logic. He's unified champ. I mean, he just happened. He stepped in to fight Zhu, and Zhu obviously has shown that he is not like the tippy top elite at 154. Mm-hmm. Zhu is fighting Joey Spencer April 5th on Prime Video. That's the next PBC card. He's in the mix too, Zoo, because of his name. And if he beat Spencer, then he maybe will fight Thurman. But in terms of Fundora versus Zayas, it's not like a fight I have to see. Like, I don't think Zayas is exactly ready for it. Could he beat Fundora? Yeah. Should Fundora win that one? Absolutely.
I think everyone can beat Fundora. That's the thing. Like, it's possible. I'm not saying everyone will. I think he's a really tough nut to crack, but I think everyone has – all these guys have the ability to do it. And even a guy like Xander Zayas, yeah, I could see it.
Well, this is what I can see next for Fundora. This is how I can see Fundora's year playing out. He comes back and he fights Zayas to fulfill the WBO mandatory sometime in summer or late summer. Then in the end of the year is when we get a bigger fight for Fundora. Could it be a unification bout with Bakram? You know, could it be a Virgil Ortiz? Or could it be an all PBC fight? You know, PBC and Team Fundora was willing to drop that WBO belt to fight Spence. He had no problem dropping the belt so they can do an all PBC pay-per-view, which is what they have shown over the years, what PBC likes to do business-wise. So does that have a Jermell Charlo? Jermell Charlo could return in a fight to get back into the scene in around the same time Fundora fights Zayas. And at the end of the year, we could see Fundora versus a Charlo. We could see Fundora versus a Thurman. Point being, like, they're going to keep it in-house.
Yeah, well, PBC, they play chess, not checkers, and they think way ahead. And obviously things change, but they're really good at making adjustments and getting the fights that they want. And it's funny. It seems like whenever they make a matchup, they never let it go. Even when things fall apart on the way there, they come back around. It's like this deal's already been done, guys. We've already spent time negotiating this. We're gonna make it happen down the line, and we're gonna jam it down your throats, and we're gonna make this fight. Yeah, it's very possible we could see a bunch of these all PBC cards. I'm very skeptical about I'm skeptical about both Charlos at this point. In terms of Jermell coming back down to 54 after he weighed 167 when he fought Saul and out with Canelo, and then Jermall, who's still undefeated, by the way. he just seems like such a loose cannon in terms of his personal life and outside the ring stuff. That I just don't know, man. Boxing is a really hard sport, and at this level, even to get to a fight takes a tremendous amount of discipline and time. And you know, these guys are big guys. Jermell wasn't easily making weight when he was active. Now you're going to come back down to weight classes and get to 54. I would be surprised. I'm very hesitant on Jermell actually being a 54 pounder once again.
Yeah, I was shocked. I'm not shocked to see him coming back because they're still relatively young guys. They're going to do their final push to make the rest of the money for their career. PBC definitely wants them. They do have name recognition. I don't know if fans believe in them the same way they believed in them 3-4 years ago, nor should they, because
how
when you disappear for that long, 33, 34-ish. I mean, they're the same age because they're twins.
Yeah, obviously they're twins.
but... Here's the, like, I don't know if fans are fully on board that, nor I don't blame them, because when you disappear out of the eye, you're gone in boxing, because there's no one going to promote for you if you're not active. And Jermell fought Canelo and completely disappeared. I understand they have their issues outside of the ring. Jermall fought on the Benavidez card, Benavidez plant. That was 2023. He's had ton of issues outside of the ring. But Jermall is supposed to come back May 31st on a PBC on Prime card with Caleb Plant headlining, not fighting each other. So another move that I'm seeing from PBC, I don't know this for sure, but this is just kind of reading the tea leaves, is that PBC is gearing up for like a second half of 2025. The June 21st is going to be Tank versus Roach 2, and then they're going to have Plant Charlo on this PBC card on May 31st. Benavidez is going to return in the second half of 2025. They're clearly setting up some type of Plant fight in the second half against maybe Jermall Charlo, maybe Berlanga. Berlanga's now talking about wanting to fight Munguia. But yeah, just to backtrack way back, I don't know about the Charlos, but I would not be shocked if Charlo was more active. Say like Jermell Charlo, 154. Say he fought like earlier this year, and he was, you know, he had a get back fight, and now he's raring to go. I wouldn't be shocked if PBC and Fundora were like, we're not fighting Zayas. We'll give up the belt, just like we were willing to give up the belt for Spence, and Fundora Charlo for the WBC title is next. That's what I think Fundora's on, because Fundora Zayas is not like, that's not a huge commercial fight. Like, Fundora didn't sell a lot of tickets in that last fight. Zayas sells tickets in New York. Maybe if they put it in New York, it could do well, but like doing well in New York is like, all right, 5,000 at the theater.
Well, Dan, why did it take so long for Fundora to finally make his first defense? Because he was waiting for Spence, which was a big fight. They obviously want a big fight. And they made the Cordell Booker fight for what? Basically just for a first defense. But nobody wanted that fight. That fight was never going to sell.
Right.
Does he go into another fight that's really not going to sell against and give Xander Zayas a shot? No, I don't see that happening. He's looking for a big fight, just like you said.
Yes.
And if they can force the Charlos, that's probably the way they're going to go. And that would get a lot more attention. But the fact that these guys have been so inactive, is their draw still there? That's the question. I don't think you really know that. I think this Caleb Plant Jermall Charlo fight, that's the right one, right? I always confuse the names.
Yeah, Maul's the bigger guy.
Right, Maul. So I think the Plant Jermall twin bill is basically to see if Jermall can get to a fight, because you don't want to make a Caleb Plant Jermall main event and then Jermall falls out.
Yeah, he's too much of a liability.
As long as you keep your main event, you're good. If Jermall falls off that fight, okay, well, that was your last chance, dude. Like you're out. But if he can get to that fight, and then obviously those two on the same dais, we're not going to have fireworks. That's going to sell that fight once again. You know, we always had that video of Jermall grabbing Plant's beard and Plant smack him in the face. So that's timeless. Everyone speaks beef. I say that all the time.
Yeah.
That's true. That'll sell a fight. You put them on the same dais on a twin bill. They're gonna get into it, of course. So that fight is resurrected right there. But I think they're testing the waters to see if Jermall can actually get there. And then for Fundora, the Jermall fight makes a lot of sense for PBC, and it's a name fight, and I'm sure it's going to be good money for Fundora. And it seems like Team Fundora is going that way. I don't think they want to go and unify with Mirtazaliyev. I don't think they want to risk it with Virgil Ortiz.
Risk it with Zayas.
I don't want to say that, because I think Fundora wants to fight everybody. I think he's a real fighter. I think he's
yeah, but okay. You know how it goes.
No, it's your team.
Fundora wants to do one thing, and his management wants to do the other.
Yeah, that's generally how all fighters operate. It's just the way the game works, unfortunately. It's interesting how this is gonna play out in the next few months. But it's cool to hear that, you know, or it seems that PBC is gonna get real active in the second half of this year.
Well, it's clear that what they're doing, we're seeing more of these prime cards because, you know, Canelo was eating up so much of their budget. Canelo, obviously they didn't want to lose Canelo, but it could be a blessing in disguise. Like 40 to 50 million is just dedicated to Canelo twice a year.
That's crazy.
That money can be put into putting on these prime cards.
Other fighters.
Right? And like they do have a good roster, PBC. Still, they do fill up these pay-per-views with compelling, you know, four fight offerings. So if you're able to put some more cards on Prime and give us some more dates, like the Fundora card was fine. It was like 2 hours. It was quick. There were fun fights. There were action. Jesus Ramos got a nice win. Terrell Gaucher got robbed in his fight with Elijah Garcia. But, you know, if they're able to put a Plant and a Charlo on Prime Video, I mean, that's what this deal was originally supposed to be. And that's what got people excited about the idea of Amazon getting into boxing. So it's pretty clear what they're doing or trying to do. And it's cool to watch it play out. This isn't all about Saudi. You know, like Saudi, yes, we're getting these big fights and, you know, we haven't got one in a minute, but we will be getting more big fights this year via Saudi Arabia. But you know, there are other promotions. There are Pro Box. There is Top Rank. There is PBC. I'm rooting for them. We all are. America, baby.
America. Boxing is alive and well, and we got a lot of cool things, you know, coming down the pike. So as long as these fights are happening, and it seems like there's a lot of motion. Emotion creates emotion, but, you know, it also creates business. We got a lot of motion going on right now, and that's great for the fans. That's great for us. And it's good for the fighters too, because guys are still getting paid and they're out there staying active, man.
Everyone eats. Everyone eats at the table. Let's have everyone eating.
There's plenty to go around.
Bickering.
There's plenty to go around.
You'd think. Weekend fights. Let's kind of rifle through them. It is a smorgasbord of fights this weekend. None huge, but some names here. William Zepeda, Tevin Farmer, two. Down in Cancun. I wouldn't mind being in Cancun right now. That is pretty cool fight setting. The rematch, we got Zepeda as the -900 favorite. Tevin Farmer dropped Zepeda in their first fight. It was supposed to be an easy win for Zepeda. I mean,
for the first couple of rounds, it looked like it was going to be. Zepeda was like unloading, and Tevin was like taking a lot of damage, but also slipping and sliding. And then all of a sudden, bang, puts him down, makes it a fight.
Good for Tevin Farmer. I mean, this guy was a champion back in like, you know, 10 years ago, him and Tank, we were supposed to, like, that was like the big fight that never really happened for Farmer. He exits boxing.
He had an upside down record too when he started. He was like a journeyman.
Yeah.
If you remember,
and then
that,
he leaves boxing. He starts like a business with a trucking business that's become very successful. I like Tevin Farmer. So I don't think he's going to win, but I love him getting these opportunities. He fought in Saudi. Like, how many fighters would love to fight in Saudi Arabia? And this guy with a backwards record to start his career out of boxing. Next thing you know, he's got the lottery ticket. Now he's fighting in Cancun. Good for you.
Attaboy. Good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. That is the Golden Boy card. Zepeda -900. Zepeda by decision, +140. So, I don't know. I got to see how Farmer enters this fight. Is he looking at it like, I already proved it the first time, and now I'm just getting my check. I'm going to go back to my trucking business and my beautiful wife and maybe get stopped? Is Zepeda going to be like, enough of this? I was once the guy at 135 that everyone was talking about, and now, you know, and now everyone's questioning me.
+140 is pretty solid, man. I like the +140. I think Zepeda by decision. I think that Tevin's tricky enough. You know, he's not going to just sit on his laurels from the last fight. But I do think Zepeda does enough to get it and shows that, listen, I'm still here at 35.
Weird, because like a year ago, everyone was talking about Zepeda. He's the guy that can beat Shakur.
It was like him and Shakur.
He's the dark horse at 135. You know, this guy throws a million punches. No one wants to fight him. And then he takes on this Farmer fight, gets dropped, doesn't look so good. Now we're getting a rematch. It's weird. Golden Boy is going to do this with their guys. Like, we talk about this a lot. Golden Boy doesn't have the biggest roster. They have to be very careful with their investments. And Zepeda, they're stars. And Zepeda is a star in Mexico, and he is a name. Over to ESPN, across the seas. Michaela Mayer, Sandy Ryan 2. Paintgate lives on, everybody. This is the most even fight of the weekend. It's a pick 'em, -110 each.
As it
should Mayer
be.
Won the
as
first well. Fight barely. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say as it should be, and as a most of the top level female fights are always they're always super, super close.
Yeah, -110 a pop. I think Mayer will win. I like Mayer in that one. Moving over to the undercard of this. This is in Vegas. This is not across the seas. This is across no seas. This is across land. It's in Vegas, that fight. Brian Norman versus Derek Cuevas. Brian Norman, remember him? He famously ducked Jerron Ennis. He is a champion at 147. He is the youngest current title holder on the male side of boxing. Is Brian Norman at age 24, first fight in 10 months, -700 favorite.
I didn't know that he was the youngest. That's interesting. But yeah, I mean, he had a stellar win to and then to be elevated. He got elevated, right? It wasn't for a title that he actually beat.
Elevated, correct?
He beat Santillan. He destroyed him in a career best performance, and then was elevated to championship status. Missed the Jerron Ennis matchup or unification, which is mind boggling. But yeah, I don't know anything about Derek Cuevas. This seems like a get back defense, but who knows? This is boxing. Anything can happen.
It is a get back defense. Now I like Norman 7-12 stoppage for +160. And if you parlay Zepeda by decision with Norman by stoppage +524.
Oof. Oof.
How do you like that? How do you like them apples?
I like them numbers.
Dan's back, baby. I haven't bet on boxing in a while. I took a little bit of a break. I'm back with a parlay that will knock your socks off. Derek Norman, 7-12. Brian Norman, excuse me. 7-12. Zepeda by decision, +524. So take that.
And then Bruce Carrington. Put in Mayer, Sandy Ryan decision. Distance.
Ruin. Yeah. But that might bring down. That might actually bring down the value of this parlay.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know how parlays and betting work. I'm not a degenerate like all you use at home.
Well, it's going to be minus money. Oh, we'll see. It can't bring it down too much because you're adding another bet to it. I'll have to check that out. But I'm definitely going to have that two fight parlay going. Bruce Carrington returns against Jose Vivas. This is a WBC eliminator. Carrington is a -1400 favorite.
Vivas is tough. He's one of those guys that like everyone has to go through on the top ranked roster if you're going to get anywhere. So I think Carrington should destroy him, but it's a good kind of litmus test fight.
I agree. Carrington is chomping at the bit, man. He is looking at featherweight and he's like, I need a fight. I need a big fight because I am 27. I'm not young. I carry myself like I'm a 21-year-old. I thought he was 21 for a while. He is up there, man, and he needs a big fight, and he needs to move it this year. You know, get this guy into a title shot. Like, I see more of him at big fights talking to media than in big fights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going on with that. So I expected this to be the year of Carrington. Maybe it still will be. But this is WBC eliminator. I don't know, whatever that you want to, whatever
he,
that means.
He does a great job marketing himself. But he has been a little quiet lately. He had that tough fight with Sagawa that kind of got people thinking like, whoa, pump the brakes. And then I think he came back with a good win on one of those cards. But yeah, this is a good test fight for where he's at. But also, this isn't the kind of fight that's going to propel you into world-class fight competition. And that weight class is super deep.
Emiliano Vargas returns, the future. That I did kid. A ESPN episode. Love him. I did an ESPN episode of The Fight Life, season 2. It was an Emiliano Vargas / Abdullah Mason episode. Nice. Top Rank is clearly pitting those two as the two futures. Will they meet? Probably not, but we will talk about it a lot. And Vargas is back. I love watching him fight. What?
Actually, they could. I mean, maybe they could meet. I just feel like Abdullah's so much bigger, but he's not.
They're both the same weight class. Yeah. I think obviously Mason is way ahead of Vargas in terms of development skills. I mean, Abdullah Mason's fighting on April 5th. He was supposed to fight Giovanni Cabrera, who was like fighting world level ish. Cabrera is out. I'm kind of upset about that. I think he got hurt or something. Big step up for Mason, April 5th.
Every fight's a step up for Mason. All he does is fight step ups. The kid, they're fast tracking him, and he's fighting tough guys. And if you look past the numbers on the guys that he's fighting, all super legit. Even the last one, Manuel James, who he blew out, was like that guy went the distance of Rolly Romero and was in the fight. Yep. And Abdullah was destroying him, dropped him like four times. This kid is on some trajectory, and he's all the smoke.
He's next.
All the hype. He deserves it. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's next. Keyshawn and Abdullah Mason are the blue chips, the apple of Bob Arum's eye, or Todd DeBuff.
It's a good place to be.
Or Carl Moretti. Yeah, they're in the penthouse. All right, I'm running out of analogies here. Running out of smoke here because the episode is over. We have nothing left to talk about. We've exhausted all of our topics.
We did it.
We did it, everybody. We did a podcast. I can now move on with my day. What are you going to do the rest of the weekend? No fights this weekend for you to travel to? I don't have much. I got the Yankees. I might go to the Yankee game Saturday. It's supposed to be 80 degrees in New York. What do we got going on this weekend?
Well, I just had my whole backyard turfed. So I got to go power wash and clean and get it all pristine. So I want my backyard to look like a resort. I want to walk back there and be like, oh, I'm on vacation every day of my life. I
want
to walk back.
You want it to look like you want it to look like Encore Beach Club at the Wynn?
Yes. Every day I just want to wake up and look out there and be like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is why I broke my orbital and got all those nosebleeds and broke my ribs. And so
damn right. Want something to show for it. One day I'm gonna have a backyard too like that. I'm gonna say this is why I did 400 plus podcasts.
That's probably more than that, Dan.
Almost 400 right now.
I know. It's going to be more than that.
That's just why I put in all that those blood, sweat, and tears, so I can have a turfed backyard.
That's it. Doesn't your dad have a turf? Does he have a turf? Because I know he's got the...
Listen, Bob Canobio's backyard is what I strive my backyard to look like. That's his backyard.
He's got a full boxing diamond back. I mean, a baseball diamond back there.
We have a wiffle ball field. He's got like an oasis in the back. We got a hot tub. He's got like a gazebo with like a fan that sprays water with fully functioning cable television outside.
That's awesome.
Yep. Like, he's got it going on, Bob. But that's what I want to be. That's Bob's house. I got a nice apartment.
At least you got something to follow. You know how to where to go. You know, you got the route already carved through the desert or the forest there. So you know what to do.
Yeah, through the desert of Long Island to the East End, baby. Hope everyone has a great weekend. Enjoy the boxing and bet that parlay. Hope we all win some money. But we're done. We're through here. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of the DMs. Goodbye.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.